Well, good morning again. It is my pleasure to be here with you. And the last time I came was about a week or maybe 2 weeks before we went into lockdown in March 2020. So a lot has changed in that time, and there was kind of a feeling of heaviness, I think, around the whole country and the whole world at that time. So a lot has happened. But I'm delighted to be able to be back again and to be with you and in this new context, in this new day, where it feels so much lighter. I kind of introduced myself a little bit in terms of the work that I do earlier on, but I didn't really introduce who I really am. I am Dave. I am a Baptist minister. I do work for African Pastors Fellowship, and I'm going to say more about that. But more important than any of those things, I'm a son. My mum is still alive. I'm a husband. My wife, Syra, is here with me. We have three children, and I know I'm not old enough. I don't look old enough. And three grandchildren who are the most blue-eyed, blonde, fair-skinned, Mzungu's white people you have ever seen. And they're beautiful, and we enjoy them very much. And when I'm in Africa, I introduce myself and I say to people, you know, I'm part of this family, I'm part of this context. And I talk about my children and I say, you know, my firstborn is Joshua, and he's an English teacher, and he is the best English teacher in the whole of the United Kingdom. And they all applaud and say, yes, of course he is. And then I say, and I have a daughter. We have a daughter. Her name is Hannah. And she's a social worker in London. And guess what? She's the best social worker in the whole of London. And they applaud. And then I say, and she's also the most beautiful young woman in the whole of the United Kingdom. And they applaud even more, especially the young men. And then I say, and we have our baby, Kieran. He's just qualified recently as a lawyer. And he is going to be the best solicitor in the whole of the United Kingdom. And again, they all clap and applaud. And then I ask them a question. I say, am I biased? Am I biased about my children? I can see a gentleman there nodding his head. And they say, no, you're not biased. Because they want to be polite. And they say, they believe that they really are the best at all of those things. And I say, of course, I'm biased. And why am I biased? Why am I biased towards my children? Because I'm their dad, exactly. Because I'm their dad. And I love them. And I've prayed for them since they were in their mother's womb. And every single day, every challenge, every success, every failure, I've lived that with them. And still, they're 32, 30, and 26 now. Still, I live every one of those opportunities and challenges with them and for them and pray for them and desire the best for them and their partners and their children. And that's because I am their father. And the passage that we're looking at this morning, John chapter 14, is about the Father's house. We've sung that there's a place for me. I'm a child of God. There's a place for me. There's a place for you. We are children of God. We are known by him. We are loved by him, even though he sees the very worst as well as those occasional high points. He still loves us and he's for us. And the things that he says about us are true. I'm his son. You're his daughter. He loves you because he loves you because he loves you. Because he is your dad, your Abba, your father, your papa. And he loves you. I said at the earlier service that when I first had a look at the passage for this morning, I thought, oh, that's a familiar passage. And as a Baptist minister of nearly 30 years or so, I've taken a lot of funeral services. And at nearly every single one of those funeral services, John chapter 14, verses 1 to 7 gets read. And it's an appropriate and a good passage to read in that context. But actually, it's not about death. It's about life. It's about hospitality. It's about hope. It's about a father who loves his children And it's about a friend who's closer than a brother in Jesus. And I was reminded of some of the homes that I've visited when I've been travelling in Africa. And I've been going to Africa for about 20 years. I go several times a year. And, you know, every time I think I've begun to understand something, I realise that there's a whole lot more that I haven't understood about the culture, the different cultures of the continent. But, you know, however long I go, I still am capable of making schoolboy errors. And one of the schoolboy errors I made a little over a year ago, I'd gone to Uganda, I had my programme all mapped out, I thought I knew who I was seeing, where I was going, and Uganda is quite a kind of a high culture. People dress well, particularly when they're meeting important people, you put on your best clothes. And I was going to be seeing people that I'd met before, that I knew pretty well. I hadn't packed a suit or a jacket. And then one of my friends said to me, "Oh, the Archbishop would like to meet you." So I said, "The Archbishop?" And sometimes people give themselves quite grand titles. And I kind of thought, is this a real Archbishop or is this some other kind of Archbishop? So I said, "The Archbishop of where?" He said, "No, the Archbishop of Uganda, Stephen Kazimba." So I said, I don't have a jacket. That was my first thought, was I don't have a jacket. And I had to borrow a jacket, and you'll see a picture of me in it a little bit later on, at the palace of the Archbishop of Uganda. So that was breakfast at the palace, in the home of the Archbishop, receiving his hospitality, discussing the work of African Pastors Fellowship and his vision for clergy formation across Uganda. And then the very next day, I was going to speak at a small conference in a town called Iganga, which is about 100 kilometres from the capital of Uganda. And you don't need to know why. It was just a difficult day. It was a hot day. It was a dusty day. It was difficult. And by the time we got to the end of the conference, I was ready to go back to the hotel and just lie on the bed or have a shower and kind of close the door on the day. And my friend who was with me said, I have a friend in this town. And that means in Ugandan kind of culture, I have to tell him that I'm here. And if he's here, we probably will then need to go and meet him. And I'm thinking, I just don't really want to meet anybody else today. But sure enough, Pastor Moses was in town, so we went to meet him. And when I was there, he said, "Oh, you must meet my wife and my daughter. They run a baby's home." So they run an orphanage. And I was taken to this orphanage, and Grace, who is the daughter, who is herself a social worker, who runs the orphanage day to day, had this little tiny baby, and they were telling me about this baby. And I made another schoolboy error. I said, "Can I hold the baby?" So I was given this tiny baby to hold. She'd been abandoned outside a bank in the town the day before. Someone had found her, taken her to the police. The police had brought her to the baby's home where she still stays. And I said, "Well, what's her name?" And they said, "Well, we have given her the name Kimberly." And that struck a chord with me because I had a sister. She died when we were very young, but her name was Kim. So I'm holding this baby called Kim. Thank you very much. And at the end of the conversation, they said, would you pray for us? And would you pray for Kimberly? And as you can probably tell, I'm not often short of words. I mean, I'm not good with numbers, but I can normally find some words. And I could not speak. I couldn't speak. And I thought to myself, I'm the kind of guy who has breakfast with the Archbishop. I'm here on strategic kingdom business. But actually, the Lord was saying to me, "What are you going to do for this one? One of the least of these. What are you going to do for me?" And so I have my family here in the United Kingdom, but I also have a granddaughter, I guess, in Uganda, who I've made a pledge to take care of as best I can for as long as she needs it. That's the heart of a father. I mean, I'm not a perfect father, not by any means, But that's the heart of a father, because our Father in heaven, who prepares a place for you, saw us when we were we were nobodies. We were lost and without hope. We were orphans. And he chose us to be part of his family. That's what this passage is about. It's about finding our way home to the Father who loves us. And there are three P's that I want to suggest that we see in this passage about the character of Jesus. Perhaps someone else could move the slides on for me. And the first of those three P's has to do with his pastoral nature. Jesus is coming alongside his followers, coming alongside his disciples to comfort them, to console them. He's painting this picture of a future hope, of a home that will be theirs beyond the trials that they are facing and are about to continue to face. And he's speaking to them in a very personal way. Although he's speaking to the group, he's also speaking to the individuals. I am who you say I am, we sang. You are who Jesus says you are. We are who Jesus says we are. We are the family of God, but you are a child, a son, a daughter of God. He knows you by name, and he prepares a place for you. He's deeply pastoral in this passage. And, you know, when I'm away in Africa, sometimes I'm away for quite long periods of time, and I kind of get into the zone, but towards the end, I'm beginning to look forward to getting back home. And sometimes Si and I will, you know, we communicate now and again when I'm away, and I'll be saying to her, you know, what I really fancy is a cheese and pickle sandwich. Now, what I wouldn't give for a cheese and pickle sandwich. And I'll get home, and perhaps if I've been good, there'll be a cheese and pickle sandwich waiting with my name on it for me, because that's what home is like, and Jesus has a home being prepared for you, fit for you, suited to your interests, suited to your character, suited to your personality. He's deeply pastoral in this passage. There's also something about presence here, because this use of the house metaphor would have resonated with his audience. They would have understood God's house to be the temple in Jerusalem, the place where God's presence resided, the place where God lived. Jesus is saying, in the place where God is, there's plenty of room for you. You're welcome there. In the living, dynamic, eternal presence of the creator of the universe, there's space for you with your name on the door. It implies something to do with family. It implies something to do with intimacy and belonging. And also in this passage, thirdly, he's preparing his disciples. He knows that he's going to be crucified. He's going to be taken from them. And he's preparing them for that eventuality, for a future where he's not physically going to be there and able to console them and encourage them. So he's guiding, he's coaching, he's teaching, he's mentoring, he's imparting knowledge and instruction to his followers in order that they would be equipped and able to stand in that day and in all of the work that would be ahead of them. He stimulates their thoughts, he stimulates questions, but ultimately he's preparing them for his being taken from them. So there are these three P's in this passage to do with pastoral care, to do with God's living dynamic presence, and to do with the preparation of leaders for a day which is coming. And to some extent, African Pastors Fellowship, the organisation that I represent, seeks to model those kinds of values. We come alongside influential leaders as pastors. I mean, I go as a pastor, and I have the privilege of pastoring other pastors in Africa. And today, with Zoom and all of those things, I'm able to do that from my kitchen in Adisham, in Kent, as well. And it's a huge privilege to be able to support women and men that God has raised up for very significant offices and ministries, and to just be their friend and to be able to pray with them and listen to them and talk with them and sometimes ask questions that help them to focus and to shape their thinking and understanding. So we offer pastoral support. We, through those people, offer contextualized presence. It's great for me to go. It's great for me to do some teaching from time to time, and I do. But that's not a very efficient way of doing ministry in Africa when you live in Kent. And nor is it very contextualized, because what do I really know about Tanzania? What do I really know about Congo? What do I really know about South Sudan? I know about the southeast of England. I can speak into the lives of women and men in the southeast of England because that's where I've lived my entire life. That's the culture that has shaped me. So it's important that we identify training partners, African local leaders, and equip them and resource them so that they can fulfill the ministry that God has called them to do, but to do that even more and to do that even better than they are already. So APF is primarily involved in leadership preparation with training at its core, be that in-service training in local centres and churches across the continent, be that academic sponsorships and scholarships for people, be that opportunities for them to travel and gain exposure and experience more widely, be that resources of different kinds, or something like Ivatabu, an electronic library stacked full of resources that are useful in ministry. So APF seeks to model these three P's: pastoral care, God's living dynamic, contextualized presence, and preparation, ministerial preparation. The way that we do that, if we can move on to the next slide, is increasingly through digital tools. Ivatabu being the most obvious of those, but there are others as well. Digital training, giving people the skills, the capacities that they need to be able to make full use of that, those possibilities. And digital theology, beginning to think more deeply about what it actually means to be human and to be in relationship with God and to be part of the church in this digital age. The same questions that we've been asking here in the UK, particularly since the pandemic, about what does church mean in this new age, are being asked in Africa as well, and we're trying to help people to begin to think about that. That's the way in which we're doing it. The truth that we're seeking to encourage is, you know, we don't peddle a particular brand or denomination, but APF would sit within what I would call orthodox mainstream evangelical Christianity, and that's kind of important in Africa, particularly in these days, and we place ourselves there, but we seek to encourage African voices, we seek to encourage African interpretations and African applications of orthodox Christian truth. And then the life that we share isn't just kind of at an academic level. I want to actually introduce you to some friends of mine and tell you how, in particular, Ivatabu is shaping their ministries. So if we could just move to the next slide. The first slide is, that's a man called Lawson Limau. Lawson is in Zambia, and he found APF online during the pandemic, and we signposted him towards Ivatabu. He installed Ivatabu on his phone, and he found some resources there about farming. And he said, I'd really like to take some of that training to pastors outside of the city and in the rural areas. And we were able to give him some funding to be able to go and do some training. And the crops have been improved through simple application of things like composting and mulching. And people's livelihoods are improved and people are lifted out of poverty to some extent. And now Lawson is very competently also teaching people how to access and begin to make use of Ivatabu. So that's what he's doing in that picture. The second picture is Grace, who I mentioned earlier on, with Kimberly. That's Kimberly. Kimberly, like our children and grandchildren and nieces and nephews, loves a screen. She can find her way around a touch screen before she can speak words. And she likes kind of coca melon and all of those things. But that's not primarily what Ivatabu is for. That Ivatabu is being used to train children and youth worker to give them access to safeguarding knowledge and skills. And that's Grace, who has a particular role managing that project. So if we move to the next slide, The man with the carrots is my friend Victor. Victor is in Rwanda, and I was in Rwanda earlier in the year, and he said to me, "Oh, we're going to a project." What he didn't tell me was that it was halfway up a mountain, and that the vehicle we were in wouldn't get to the place where we were going. So I was, again, inappropriately dressed, because I was dressed like this, thinking, you never know who you're going to meet. You don't want to be felt caught without your jacket. And I'm literally scrambling up a mountainside and falling into ditches in order to get to this project, which is an agricultural project, a cooperative of women. His wife is very much involved in that, and they were harvesting carrots. The next picture is Rose Mugabe. Rose is the wife of the former General Secretary of the Baptist Union of Uganda. She also works for an organization in Uganda called Pastors Discipleship Network, where she heads up the Women Leaders Ministry. And a lot of her work, again, is around agriculture and teaching women vocational skills in order that they can make a better living and be involved in ministry in that way. If we move on some more, that's Walter Rutto and the team of Transformation Compassion Ministries in Kenya. Walter has developed a fantastic theology and development course, which is accredited by Kenya Highlands University, and that's his team, and I was there with them, and we've done some digital theology training in Kenya Highlands University together, and all of the material for TCN's course now sits within Ivatabu, so we're able to offer a certified course to people around the continent through Walter's course. And again, if we move on, the man with the taxi behind him and only half his face is a very quiet... In fact, I think, did Heaven Light come with me? Was anyone here? Did you meet Heaven Light? I think Heaven Light came with me the last time, or the time before last when I was here. And he uses Ivatabu particularly to teach leaders and leadership skills, but also to gather husbands and wives and to teach marriage and family resources together with his wife, Kezia. The other man in the smart shirt is Emmanuel Gitira. He's in the far southwest of Rwanda, but he also ministers into Burundi and Congo and Tanzania, and has developed his own online theology course, which he's teaching people, and again, using resources that he's found in Ivatabu to supplement his own knowledge. And then if we move on again, that's me at the palace with the Prime Minister, the Archbishop, in my borrowed jacket. And the other thing that you probably can't quite see is that I'm standing on tiptoes, because he is a very tall man. And I was feeling slightly intimidated, but it genuinely is a palace. It's a beautiful place where he lives. And I want to contrast that in closing with another home that I have visited when I was there in Africa, very back in the early days of my visits to Africa. I wasn't visiting the palace of the Archbishop then. I was teaching in the shade of a mango tree in the northeast of Uganda. And there were a bunch of pastors. Well, they said they were pastors, but they didn't have any of the resources that I would think that you essentially need to be a pastor. They didn't have their own Bible. They had stubs of pencils to make some notes on. This was 20 years or so ago. And I was being translated into Itesu. And because my translator could speak good English and I could speak no Itesu, naturally, I got to know him quite well. We became friends. And towards the end of the week or so that I was with him, he said, "I would be delighted and privileged if you would come and visit my home and meet my family." So I said, "Well, I'm sure we can arrange that." And so it was arranged. And together with other members of the team that I was with, we got into this bus and we drove until you couldn't drive any further. And then he was most apologetic. He said, "I'm sorry, you've got to walk the last part." And we said, "That's okay, we can walk." And we walked through the bush, and eventually we came to a clearing in the bush. And it was the most typical African scene that you can imagine. Mud houses, thatched roofs, animals running around, women cooking the food over there, and his farm over here. And he showed us around, and then he sat us down in the shade. And before the food was served, he stood up and very formally said, "You are in the continent of Africa, in the nation of Uganda, in the region of Teso, in the district of Soroti, in the village of Atteria, at the home of Elebu William. You are most welcome." And in that moment, I thought, here is a man who knows who he is. He knows where he is. He knows his dependence on the earth beneath our feet, because his father and his grandfather and his uncle are buried over there just beyond that mango tree. For generations, they have farmed this land. And he's welcomed us, these strangers from far away, with our funny habits and funny ways, into his home. And they gave us the very best meal that they were able to provide. And I thought, you know, we are so slapdash at times with our hospitality, in welcoming people to our homes with paneled walls. And yet here was this man who, in relative terms, in economic terms, had so little, who was prepared to give such a warm welcome and give of the very best that he had available. And there's a home, coming back to the beginning, the Father's house. It's going to be the very best that heaven can provide, not the very best that earth alone can provide, not the very best that my wife or my mother can provide, but the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth, the very best, and prepared for you. And somehow, in the mystery of God's providence and grace, African Pastors Fellowship is involved in that ministry of impressing upon people the reality of the Father's house and the welcome that awaits them and the love that he has for them. Because it's not really about breakfast with an archbishop. It is about Kimberley. And it's about investing in Christian leaders across that continent in order that a day will come when there won't be orphan children, when there won't be a need for that kind of ministry. Because actually every tear from every eye has been wiped. And we are embraced and caught up in the Father's love. That is the vision that we harbour. That is what we long for and what we hope for. In the meantime, we have to live with compromise. And so APF is needed, and your support for APF is valued. But we're working towards a day when that won't be necessary anymore. And we will each find our home and our place and somewhere to belong where there's perfect love in the Father's house.